Vice President Mike Pence says he's happy to take a lie detector test, but only on the condition that no one asks how many times a day he thinks about the shirtless volleyball scene from Top Gun.
Kim Jong-un threw a massive military parade to celebrate North Korea's 70th anniversary.
Ugh, it's like when your best friend steals your dream wedding, said President Trump.
U.S. intelligence admit that they made a mistake when they accused a female Russian agent for trading sex for information. They also admit they made a mistake when they thought she was a fembot whose vagina shoots bullets.
And finally, Hurricane Florence is now a potentially catastrophic Category 4 storm headed straight towards the Carolinas. On the bright side, this will probably take care of that pesky Confederate monuments problem. The Trump Report starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, that's right. We are right on into the danger zone. And sure, the excuse is because we had a joke about Top Gun. But really, aren't we always living in the danger zone? And no, that's not a commentary about the current administration. You can take it that way if you want. But just really, day in, day out, that's how I live. Right in the danger zone. Welcome, I'm Christian Blatt. This is the Trump Report. Joined, as almost always, by Tamara Brown.
Hello.
And returned, our world traveler, Scott Moore.
Hey, guys.
Man of the people.
An S-man of the people, if you will.
That's right.
So let's see. We had you back for a week and then you were gone. Mm-hmm. And Chelsea was back for a week and she's still gone. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'll get the whole band back together pretty soon.
Yeah.
You were just in Cuba, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk a little bit more about that later.
Sure.
And I think we talked about where you were before that was Alaska, right?
Yes.
And you've been basically texting with Sarah and Todd Palin the whole time since.
Of course, yes. Yeah.
Making his way through the alphabet. Yes. Countries.
That's right, yes. Going through an alphabetical order.
I cannot wait until you go to Zaire. Anyway, there's a lot to talk about since our last episode, starting with anonymous. A word that is easy for some of us to say, but apparently not for our president. Let's take a look and a listen.
Latest act of resistance is the op-ed published in the failing New York Times by an anonymous, really an anonymous, gutless coward. You just look.
All right, you can stop it right there, Juliet. Now, there's a couple of great things here. The fact is, two times in at trying to say anonymous, he realized, all right, this isn't happening. I'm just going to call him a gutless coward. And I think there's a lot of reasons as to why he's having trouble. There's a theory that he has dentures, and it's sort of like a weird, you know, makes the teeth move in a weird way. And I posted this on Twitter over the weekend. I was like, look, I don't care about anybody's politics, whether you hate him too much that you think he's not capable of making you laugh, or you love him so much that you do it. It's like, you have to think that that's funny because he tries twice.
Every time, you know? It makes me laugh, just, even now.
Yeah, it's just, he just can't say it, you know? And obviously there's bigger issues, you know, related to Anonymous, but just sort of a gut reaction from a comedic standpoint. Tamara, on a scale of 1 to 5 laughs, how many laughs does that get?
Well, it could none if he just reminds you of your drunk uncle.
Uh-huh.
So
that's true.
I wonder what he was. It was that split second. You know, when you know somebody's name, you've always called them Kara, but it turns out her name's Kayla, and you're like, okay, which one is it? Which one is it? It was that moment where he was like, is the word anonymous or optimus or analogous or what? Well, which one is it? I'll just make a noise and it'll encompass all of them.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine he'd have a similar difficulty using the word erogenous, except he has no occasion in his life to ever use it. Scott, as you said, it's just still funny time you see
it's still funny, and I love that they did the Phenomena Muppets.
Oh, yeah, I did
see
that.
It makes me laugh every time.
Yeah.
him in.
But I will give credit to him about one thing in there. The fact that he's somewhat successfully rebranded the Gray Lady as the failing New York Times.
Yes.
And to the extent that Sarah Huckabee Sanders definitely has her marching orders to call it the failing New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
And Those are the sort of things that just make me laugh. It's just
the
like he can't
flailing
the flailing New York,
New York Times.
Is that he can't mention the New York Times without saying how flailing it is.
Yeah,
or flailing it is.
He did tweet about something I think over the weekend about how great somebody had said something in another op-ed or something about how good everything was going, and then he quotes the New York Times when it's positive for him, of course. Then he didn't say failing.
Well,
the
then
New York
it's
Times.
Not failing. Then it's back on the way up. Yeah, exactly. So. Obviously, at issue here is the op-ed by Anonymous. Mm-hmm. And at one point, there were betting lines as to who Anonymous mm-hmm. was. I think it's still out there, but I actually checked with the website earlier today. And they didn't seem to be taking action on it anymore. So I'm like, what do they know that we don't?
Yeah.
And a lot of times that happens when you have a lot of people taking odds on one thing in particular. You know, it'll happen with reality TV competitions. A lot of times people who edit, say, like Survivor, they don't know for sure who the winner is, but they know who the final two are.
Mm-hmm.
So they will put money – and I know this is crazy, but they'll put money on basically both of those. So I'm starting to wonder if maybe somebody in the – or I guess Anonymous themselves is probably like, oh – well, I'm a 1,300-to-1 shot. Let me go ahead and put a grand on that, and I'll out myself. But you know, I think that they're getting closer to finding who it is. But it's a very interesting thing to sort of read about.
Should we all take bets here?
Well,
that's what we always talk about. Who's the next one that's going to be fired? And you know, we're still thinking like Kellyanne Conway still is there. Like that's the one I kept thinking.
A lot of people were wondering if it was indeed Mike Pence. Because there was like some evidence that in the op-ed the word lodestone appeared.
Lodestar.
That's what it is. We had the word. Yeah, lodestar appeared. Yeah. And then the only time that anybody associated with the White House had used it was once, and it was Mike Pence. Now that could very well be
that was a misdirect.
That could definitely be a red herring there because this just doesn't seem like Mike Pence's way to get to become president. I don't think Mother would let him bring down the president.
Well, I don't know because on one hand, I thought it was more of like, okay, let's throw that in there to kind of take it off the case of someone else who actually did
it. Sure, yeah.
But on the other hand, if it was him, he's the only one that's basically protected. He can't be fired because of the Constitution. He's locked in as vice president, and Trump can't remove him. So on the other hand, he's the most protected of anybody pretty much there. But yes, I agree. I don't think it was him because I don't think that's his style per se, as we've seen how he's been groveling over Trump and how and everything. That would be something that I wouldn't quite imagine him doing. But then again, he is kind of... Yeah, a politician, and he's playing the game, and maybe he feels this is his chance to finally be president.
And over the weekend, he did tell Chris Wallace that he would take a lie detector test, as we mentioned in the beginning. So I think that he wouldn't do well on a lie detector test. So the fact that he's willing to volunteer. Mm-hmm. But Tamara, do you have any thoughts as to who it might be? Sarah Huckabee Sanders?
I think it would. I do. I do think it's Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Oh, I was just
Sanders.
Joking. Okay, I'm sorry. I wouldn't have taken that from you if I knew you were going
to
say that.
I do think it's her because I feel like her job, she has to deal with the most BS from him because it is she defends him because that is what her job is to do. But how frustrating for her must it not – now I'm defending her. How frustrating must it be for her to – half the cringeworthy things that it's her responsibility to stand behind. So I feel like, as immoral as she is, I do think that it wouldn't surprise me if she was the one that's, you know, gunning for him.
Well, especially when, you know, the whole rumor was she was going to be out in the fall anyways. So maybe she had already been planning on being out. And so it was an easier thing to do because she wasn't going to be
there
long term anyways.
She's vehemently denied it, but she lies.
Everybody,
anyway,
yeah,
so
I was going to say everybody's going to deny it at first.
I don't think that that's...
Oh, it's me. Yeah. You know, because if they were going to do it, they would have just said their name to begin with. So I think everyone's going to play the game right now until, you know, we actually figure out who
it is. Yeah, I do think that it's probably not one of your, you know, like the 10 names that come to mind. Like, you know, people are wondering, is it General Kelly, you know? And I think that that's somebody who's in a real position to make actual change, doesn't need to write
the op-ed. My thinking is that it's somebody who is, who, you know, maybe you've heard their name in passing, maybe you've seen them, but it's not one of the, I'm using the air quotes, one of the stars.
Right. It's not the household names. It could be like a senior official of some other area church.
Yeah. Like there were rumblings that it was like a senior official at the State Department, that sort of a thing. So, it'll be interesting to see, but, I think that, I do believe that it is a real person, that the failing New York Times.
What if it was Ivanka? I just thought. What if it was Ivanka?
There were odds on Ivanka.
I just thought of that. It kind of makes sense a little bit. I think there's a chance it could be. I think that's where I'd put my money, actually.
I would put more money on Jared than Ivanka, but, you know, maybe they wrote it together, you know. And we have a great image of what Ivanka thinks of the idea. Like, no, it couldn't possibly be me, for those watching on YouTube. Ivanka's like, oh, no, I don't know the word lodestar or lone star.
No, that's exactly why I just thought of her, because I was trying to think who is verbally competent enough to have penned it, because it's not Kellyanne Conway. It's not Giuliani.
Yeah, let's take Pence off the list then, if that's the criteria.
There's people that we know are not good linguistically, so I think we can take them out of the equation. But Ivanka is.
No, Giuliani would have somehow gone on Meet the Press and given away that it was him.
Yes.
You know, he would have basically been like, so this op-ed that I wrote, I mean, whoever wrote, you know, it would have probably been one of those moments. So I think it's probably not going to be Giuliani.
Or I wrote it, but it was just to get people to think that I actually was going to say something like that, but I didn't mean to do it. He twisted around.
So I don't believe that the New York Times would have printed this if it weren't verifiable who the person was. And of all people, I saw on Twitter, Bill Kristol, the Weekly Standard, very conservative, very anti-Trump, but still conservative. He mentioned that he spoke with the person, you know, just sort of more to like let conservatives know, like, yeah, I get it. Maybe you don't believe the New York Times, but I've talked to this person. So obviously, when you think that there's a conspiracy, you know, you're going to think everybody's in on it. This has definitely brought the phrase deep state to a lot of to the foreground. But I think that this is a very effective method, because the person could very well have put their name to it. And maybe they'll actually out themselves at some point. Maybe they, you know, as soon as their pension kicks in or something, maybe.
Right.
But what this does is it just creates havoc for the president, because you know he can't think about anything else. Well, even though he's talked about some other things and he's made some appearances, this is still on his mind. This is still the most important thing to him in his life.
His actions are just validating everything that the op-ed says. Like, what a responsible adult in his position would do is not give any credence. Like,
right,
just
not even talk about
just ignore it. Just I'm reminded for some reason of that time when Obama was still in office and Trump offered $1 million if he would show his birth certificate, or maybe it was $3 million to any charity. And he was leading up to this big announcement. Trump was going to make a big announcement about his birth certificate, and the announcement was, "I'm going to donate $3 million to whatever charity of your choice if you produce your birth certificate." And there was not a word like, Obama was just like shoo fly, you know, like if Trump approached it like that, we wouldn't still be talking about it.
Right, it would be that with the Russia investigation, with Woodward's book, all those type of things. It's like you cannot let it go, and the more you talk about it, the more you're keeping it out there, and the more that it's being talked about in a negative way, and it just keeps the cycle going.
And it's
going.
It's like, oh, that validating. The person that's described in the op-ed would behave the way that you are right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things swirling around him and everybody's out to get him. I mean, basically, I don't know. I feel like this is sort of the final maybe 20 to 30 pages of a Shakespeare play. You know, basically, you can't trust anyone.
Right.
And he's had to call in favors from Melania. And I think it's like a genie in a bottle. He only gets three. And I think she's done two now, because she's just like, yeah, whoever this anonymous is, not me. Whoever anonymous is, seriously, not me. It should really come forward, because they're doing more damage.
Again, linguistically, I don't think the provocateur of Be Best wrote the op-ed.
That, right.
It's fair, but there could definitely be people on her staff who was like,
writing it for her.
It's like, what do you think of this?
Yeah, this is great. Exactly. Like, maybe, write it for me. This is what I want it to say.
Yeah.
And then they write it for her.
And I think that it definitely does more damage by not putting your name on here because of the fact that, you know, he talks a lot about a witch hunt.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, the collusion and the special counsel. There is definitely a witch hunt going on right here. And they just need to find out, you know, who it is. And there are probably a lot of people whose jobs are, I don't care what else you do, you find out who this person is.
It is curious. I wonder the motive of the person who wrote it, just because of, like, yeah, putting that information out there. But also, like, you knew, if all of it's true, you knew how the president would react to it. So what are you trying to, like, you don't want your name out there, but you also think that you can secretly still perform your duties within his administration, knowing that he was going to, you know, only focus on this now? And I'm just curious as to what the person who wrote it, is this exactly the result that they were hoping for?
I think so, actually. I think this is, I mean, it's probably even played out better than they thought that it would, because it's very disruptive to do the sorts of things, you know, like hiding papers from his desk, which that's an allegation from the Bob Woodward book. But it's to do those sorts of things that make it difficult for him to do things. But when you're able to be disruptive and then write about how disruptive you are and put it in the failing New York Times, I think that I feel like you're doing a lot of distraction. You know, you're creating a lot of distraction from a president that you don't want focused on any one thing. You want him to be focused on kneeling at the NFL. You want him to get into a Twitter war with LeBron James. You know, you basically want him to have the kind of spats that Nicki Minaj has.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's interesting, and I hope we don't find out for a little while.
I don't think we're going to find out who it is.
And I think this person knew before they did it that, like you were saying, there was going to be a chance that they were going to be found and they were going to be leaving, and that's where it kind of goes back to a Sanders or someone that was already planning on leaving in the near term, to where they felt that they could put this out there for a bit before they were going to be found and then they would leave. So
yeah, like I would say it's not like a Sean Spicer type who isn't there anymore. It's not Reince Priebus. Now, if he were still there, he's actually probably somebody who I would have been like, yeah, this seems kind of like his style. But so it's – I don't think it's any of the old guys. It's not Omarosa, because she did all of her writing for her book.
Right. She's not giving any of that stuff away for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which they might have to start doing with her book. They might have to start giving it away for free. Maybe they bundle it together with Bob Woodward's book. But people are a lot less interested in her book because of the anonymous.
And the Woodward book, too.
Yes, I mean, and the Woodward book. And we talked a little bit about the Woodward book last week, where, you know, neither of you were here at the time. So we'll talk about that in a moment. But
that sounded very like, I know, it did well. Neither if of you were here. So
I don't know that either one of you had a note excusing your absence.
It's fine. It's fine. You weren't here. It's fine. Yep.
You weren't here.
I'm not holding it against you.
I played hooky. Didn't show up.
Yeah, I know. Somebody had to go to Cuba. You want to talk about anti-American activities? You went to Cuba. And
yep,
Tamara ate at a Cuban restaurant. So that's almost as bad. Anyway, Trump wants Jeff Sessions, someone else that he doesn't like, someone who might have written it.
Right, that's true.
You know, he wants him to investigate the anonymous op-ed writer, and Trump is tweeting about treason, ? Which that was the single word in the tweet, which was like, well, now who are you talking
about?
You know, I'm sorry. You're going to have to be more specific. Right. Yeah. Putin's like, what? You didn't run that one by me. What is this? So, but there's no actual crime. Like, this isn't treasonous. This is just saying, you know, this isn't like I'm actively, you know, this is like I'm putting a couple of speed bumps in the road here. This isn't like I'm going to blow up a highway. You know, this is. I mean, you could get Jeff Sessions to find out who it is, but what are you going to charge him with?
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. There is no crime, and there is certainly no treason. He doesn't understand the definition, but there's no crime to be able to talk. Even if it was completely fabricated, you can say whatever you want about a government official, and it's that, and that's part of the strength of having that First Amendment, and it's something that he just can't stand. But that's your right to be able to talk about how you feel.
It's a security risk, and his followers, if you in any instance, if you claim national security, I mean, that's the most rallying, you know, way to get them scared and riled up. And it's a security issue. Mm-hmm. It's a security issue. So that's the angle he's going for with it.
Right. But there's, like you said, there's nothing there.
Yeah, but if you tell, you know, if you tell the Trump nation, as it were, that this is a very serious crime, I do think a lot of them will be like, well, yeah, look, they're trying to take down our president, you know, despite the fact that there may have been efforts to undermine the previous president. Hey, we're going to talk about him in a little bit. But let's talk.
So there were other anonymous things leaked for other presidents.
I mean, Nixon. Although we know mm-hmm. we know who that is now. We know that that was Mark Felt.
Wasn't Primary mm-hmm. Colors anonymous at first?
It was. Yeah, yeah. The book was. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But they definitely fictionalized some of that. But right. I guess that hidden in there are some blatant truths. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So speaking to Trump officials, Bob Woodward says a key Trump official told him his new book is 1,000% correct. Now, that sounds like a Trump statement. The 1,000% correct, mm-hmm. Bob Woodward. And – you know, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is allegedly, reportedly, she's saying that they, and President Trump's saying it too, that they didn't get the quotes can't possibly be accurate because he doesn't talk like that. And that was a tweet from President Trump. And I know that Sarah Huckabee Sanders has said that, you know, all it takes is a $10 fact check to, you know, see if the quotes are
we talking
accurate.
About the Woodward book?
The Woodward book. Yeah.
Quotes from the of Trump mm-hmm. in the Woodward
yeah.
book?
Yeah. So they're okay. trying to now say that quotes of Trump aren't in the Woodward book. Now, Woodward has released a phone conversation he had with him because initially Trump was saying, like, they didn't even ask me to be in it. He's like, well, no, here's the tape of you saying, like, oh, yeah, y'all definitely talk to you. Let's
right.
just
and then he never
set it
did.
Up. And then he never did.
Right.
So it's like, it's not like we didn't try to talk to you, just you mm-hmm. didn't want to talk to us.
Right.
So, and there's a number of allegations in there. And the one of the more recent ones is Woodward says in the book is called Fear, by the way, that Trump nearly provoked North Korea into war with a single tweet. And this is apparently a tweet that he didn't send.
Mm-hmm.
They were the ones that we read that he did send.
Right.
That a lot of people were convinced that, like, well, yes. this is where the war starts.
Right.
And so it's like, well, what did he not send? So, and I said, I made this joke last week. You know, look, I don't have time to read the book, but the book came out today. I figure by tomorrow, our friend Drexel Hurd will have read the entire thing.
I'm going to read it. I don't know if I'll have time to read it by next week,
but
you'll
have read some of
it. Yes.
Okay. That's so. Good because I would love to have time to read it. But, who should do the book on tape? You know,
you don't want to read it to your kids at night time.
I've thought about it. Maybe Alec Baldwin as Trump.
Yeah,
or as long as you read it in a voice like this, they won't know the difference.
For my 3-year-old would get it, but it's true for the 9-month-olds. Yeah, if I just read like that, it'll be all right. Yeah. So I don't know, Tamara, your thoughts as we have anonymous and then not so anonymous Bob Woodward, sort of. Discounting for a second whether or not this administration should be governing, how difficult do you think they're making it on themselves to try and actually go about the business of the country because they can't just look the other way from stuff like this? And it's not just President Trump. I mean, it comes from there, but everybody has to be really focused on these things.
So how are they making it harder on themselves by focusing on this rather than?
Yeah, I mean, are they able to govern? I mean, you know, honestly, even if they completely discounted it, the American people would still be somewhat focused on it. But you're making them more focused on it.
You know, his people in favor of him always say, like, he can't do anything no matter what he says, no matter what he does. The left jumps on him. But he lets the left jump on him. And so, again, it's like, yeah, if it's. Any time anybody is saying anything to him that he feels is unfair, if he were just able to turn the other cheek, it would be fine. But he's not, and here we are.
Yeah, I mean, I would. There's sort of two prongs to it. There's one where you're getting this constant drip, drip, drip from all. And of course, you can go back and say Fire and Fury from Michael Wolff and Omarosa's book and all that. But it's a constant barrage of a lot of negativity from people who are supposedly inside this White House. That are continuously leaking very bad information about this president and saying how, you know, these issues. And there is a common thread, and you have this anonymous in the New York Times op-ed. And now you have Woodward's book, who is, all accounts, a respected journalist who's been covering multiple presidents on both sides of the aisle for many, many years. And the point is, like Tamara's saying, if they would have just let it go and he never brought it up or say, I have no time for this because I'm busy working for the American people on this great economy that blah, blah, blah. You know, if he was staying focused to the things that would probably help someone when everything else in the country is well and you've got a midterm in 60 days, that would be helpful, but he can't let it go, and that's why it makes it worse, because now it's constantly out there, and it's reminding people, and the fact that he has to keep denying it and bringing it up makes it more out in the news and makes people think about it more, and again, brings his disapproval ratings higher because he cannot let those things go. Whereas, like Tamara said, if he did, and we were just focused on the economy and them working on things, then it could be different for him heading into the midterms.
Here's my question. Okay, so the economy is great right now. He says the GDP is the highest it's ever been ever, mm-hmm. which is untrue. It's the yeah. highest it's ever been in 10 years. But
which is ever. Go on.
Yeah, or for his mind. Yeah.
But anyway, continue. But unemployment, you know, he does exaggerate the statistics mm-hmm. of it, but mm-hmm. it is unemployment is the lowest it's been in quite a long time.
Yes.
He claims that black people and Latinos, it's the lowest it's ever been, which is partially true because we've only been keeping track of racial statistics since like the mid-70s or something like that. So anyway, my point is the economy, though, is great. What did he do to make the economy great?
Well, I think that not that much. I mean, I think he has policies that, and then some of it is continuing from Obama. And let me sort of take back not that much. I'm saying he's definitely made efforts that have impacted the economy positively, but there are definitely things that started under President Obama. Right. I think that, and you're absolutely right, though. He should never talk about any of this. If he felt like Sarah Sanders needs to go out one time and talk about the anonymous, this is what he should be talking about. It's like, hey, you know, those of you that didn't have a job a few years ago with the failing Barack Obama and the failing New York Times, everything's going great right now. I told you I was going to make America great again.
He could get liberals at least closer to not being so much against him. If instead of just touting low economy, low economy, low economy, if he had the ability to explain why the economy is low right now, what did you do? Your tax plan is not the reason unemployment is at its lowest right now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, he gave tax breaks to corporations and the wealthy, and middle class got a little bit in their paycheck, but that's not enough that's propelling a strong economy. What is it that he is doing? And if he could somehow, when he's at his podium bragging about his accomplishments, just lay it out for me a little bit more, because and this question isn't just for this panel, for anybody who's going to comment on this, you know, on YouTube, the conservative that's constantly saying Christians. And I also
our biggest fan. I don't know who you're talking about. We have a number one fan who watches every show. I don't know. I don't know who
so
you're talking
about. So my question is, for conservatives, what has he done to create a low unemployment rate?
Well, I'm also going to add, and I've said this before on this panel, but in general, is that presidents are given a lot more credit with an economy when they have nothing to do with it. And I said that with Obama, too. But the point is, he also inherited a strong economy.
Yes.
He didn't inherit – it would be one thing if he inherited the economy that Bush had, and within, you know, months things were being turned around. You could say, okay.
Yes.
Awesome. But the fact is it's been handed to him, and we're at a point now – at some point – it's going to be a cycle and it's going to go down. And then what's going to happen is he going to, you know,
he hasn't flubbed it.
But I know at some point, you know, and I'm sure they'll say it, because if Democrats take control, then he's going to blame them when it invariably falls during his term. But the thing is, yes, if he could be more articulate and actually explain, it might get people to be like, okay, great. But the fact that he goes on and continues to throw these same
and that is the case for anything,
right?
Like Trump. Okay, you think the Affordable Care Act is garbage. Tell me how you think that. Tell me, like, in any of your policies that I am absolutely against, try to convince mm-hmm. me, other than just saying the Affordable Care Act is a disaster. It's a disaster. You know, like, if he or anyone in the administration had the ability to articulate things a little bit better, I think we wouldn't be so divided right now.
Right, and I think that there are definitely going to be those people who are so entrenched in their beliefs that you're not going to win them over. But certainly independents are willing to be convinced by that sort of information. You know, I think that...
What, just by saying it's a disaster?
No, by giving them specifics. Mm-hmm. Like, if you give specifics, there are people who are like, you know, there's a lot of things I don't like about... I know plenty of people that, like, they didn't vote for him, they don't like him, but mm-hmm. they're like, things are going all right now. And they do feel good about getting another Supreme Court nominee. There are things that people are doing that his base and even the not so base, you know, I'm talking about like actual conservatives who didn't want to vote for him, who just didn't vote for anybody, basically, or wrote in Paul Ryan or something crazy. But, you know, I think that that he's capable of convincing some people. There are definitely people that no matter what happens, you know, Kamala Harris is never going to be like, you know what, I really should have given him a fair shake.
Sure.
But I think there are plenty of people out there that could benefit from what you're asking mm-hmm. for.
Because I challenge every Republican that I talk to now when they tout the economy, that's exactly what I say. What has he done to cause a low unemployment rate? And they don't really have – well, his tax plan. Okay, well his tax plan gave breaks to the wealthy. So how is that helping the unemployment?
And to companies that are now using it for their shareholders and everything else. It never goes to the employees. And that's the other issue too is, yes, there are great jobs out there, but they're not the high-wage jobs either. And it's a lot of people that are still trying to make ends meet and have to have second jobs to pay the bills and other things. So it's not – that it's everyone may be working, the economy better, but they're not the high wage jobs that are getting people out of poverty or out of, you know, lower middle class where they can barely pay for everything and pay for bills and get ahead and save a little bit. So that's
I forget
the other
what
problem.
Our next topic is, but that just reminded me of Bernie's new pitch.
Well, take a moment for Bernie's pitch. We want to talk about Obama before we run out of time. But what is Bernie's new? And I can't believe Chelsea's not here. We're actually going to talk about Bernie's new pitch.
is to for any corporation like such as Amazon, multi-billion-dollar corporation, for they want to build any employees, for example, who work for Amazon who are on government assistance. Amazon has to that will come out of Amazon's. They will have to make up for that in taxes for forcing their not paying their employees enough to have a livable wage.
Right.
So for any employees that are having to have government assistance, food stamps or housing or welfare or Medicare or anything like that. The cost of that will not come out of the taxpayer's pocket. It will come out of Jeff Bezos' pocket or whatever company they work for.
But not paying them enough to.
Wouldn't Amazon then just fire those people sort of like when, you know, when the minimum wage has to go up to $15 in your state, then you're going to have less people.
There's criticisms of it. That's one of them. Another one.
But then when they hire other people now that are, you know, then they have to pay those people more because it's the same thing. Because if you're still not paying those people enough and they have to go on government assistance, then therefore it's the same situation.
So there will be, you know, things rooted out for it. There's also a concern that, you know, if because a family would be receiving more money for government assistance than a single individual. Mm-hmm. So wouldn't that encourage Amazon to only hire, you know, single people and not anybody who has a family?
But yet you can't ask those kind of questions like either legally. So that would be difficult to do. Yeah, it's an interesting idea, though.
Well, and one that we can certainly revisit, and especially because Bernie's involved, Chelsea will just be like, why can't we talk about Bernie? Well, we did. You just weren't here. I did want to talk about President Obama made a big speech in Illinois at the end of last week. President Trump did say he fell asleep during it, but let's be honest, he was already asleep,
right.
And there was no way he was going to watch anyway, but I'm sure he was asleep during it. So very quickly, Scott and Tamara, sort of, and whether you saw some, just read a little bit about it, what are your thoughts? Scott first, what did you think, you know, having President Obama make this kind of appearance,
yeah.
really speak out against the sitting president, which we have the tradition for, I don't even know how far back, that you, if you're the predecessor, you don't actively criticize the sitting president.
Well, look, I mean, I think that has been thrown out the window because I think he had finally gotten to the point where I've had enough with Trump consistently doing that all the time, which again, a sitting president wouldn't talk badly about their predecessor, even when they were different parties and everything too. Again, it was just protocol. And that was things that didn't happen. But I think Obama had finally gotten to the point where it's like, okay, well, he's continuing to do this. It's time that I kind of step up for myself a little bit. I mean, it was great to hear him because you're like, oh, here's an adult in the room again, hearing someone that knows how to talk and lay out coherent messaging here. But, you know, you had both sides there because you had some of the Republicans that were kind of licking their lips thinking, great, now we've got our, you know, this guy back out of Obama who's a lightning rod for the far right that's now going to get them motivated to go out and vote. So on one hand, you also had Republicans that seemed to be very pleased by seeing Obama back out there again because it's going to get their base riled up. And of course, you saw a lot of Democrats that were very happy to hear from him because they're like, oh, we miss that. We miss him. It's great to hear from him again. And they feel this is a win for them because now they're going to get their base riled up to go out and vote in the midterms, which, as we know, they got Obama got them out for the two terms he ran for president in large numbers. They're hoping that that'll help get those people out. So you can kind of see from both directions how they were spinning it and taking it as a positive for both sides there.
Is that how you see it, Tamara, that it is a positive for both sides, or is it really stronger for one or the other?
I really don't know what Obama's goal was, if it was he felt this will help Democrats in the midterm elections. It was certainly enjoyable. Mm-hmm. I mean, it felt good to watch. And mm-hmm. it was when he said the part about you do not defend Nazis in no uncertain terms.
Mm-hmm.
Do you say something like that? And that was just, we can't let time let us forget about these things that Trump has done. And so I think it was, you know, it was enjoyable to watch, but I'm already on Obama's side. So for somebody who's not, I don't know I don't know what it's actually going to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, I think he articulated things that maybe a lot of people who are in opposition to the president haven't heard said because, you know, you have people who speak out, but they all seem to have a little bit of something to lose. And President Obama at this point, I believe there are no F's left to give mm-hmm. for the president.
Exactly.
Or for the former president. Mm-hmm. There is, of course, to what Scott said, sort of this idea that it does energize Republicans a little bit more. And there was a townhall.com article that said it may energize Republicans more than Democrats. Your point, the quote that you isolated, which is, you know, you don't defend Nazis. The sort of counter to that right away from conservatives were, isn't it just as easy to say radical Islamic terror, you know, a phrase that they always wanted their president, and when it was President Obama, they wanted him to say. So you have sort of like, oh, let's bring all this stuff back. So I don't know that it's done more harm than good, but I do think if he is a presence who is out there so much and they consistently have Obama to point at, I don't know how much that helps. I think despite what Nancy Pelosi says, and she wants to be around forever to mm-hmm. fight Trump, she, you know, at the one hand, she says there needs to be younger, newer energy. I don't know where it is. You saw the people, we talked about this last week, you saw the people who were using the Kavanaugh hearings as their opportunity to, you know, get their voices heard. People who are all running for president, none of whom were going to vote for Kavanaugh anyway, but they all felt like they were getting this opportunity. So you're starting to get that, but at the same time, you don't get as much, you know, you don't get as much attention as when President Obama speaks. President Obama that speech was carried live on the failing CNN, the whatever mm-hmm. happened to MSNBC, and the only trustworthy mm-hmm. source, Fox News. All three of them had it. I don't think InfoWars had it, but all three of those all had it. And, you know, it's an entire speech by a former president. That's a pretty big deal. So even Fox News is like, this is great for ratings.
Yeah.
Let's get this guy on more often.
Exactly. You know?
I wish Bush would do it. I wish Bush would do the same thing.
Well, I mean, he was already – President Bush, 43 we're talking about, was criticized for speaking out against President Trump as much as he did at John McCain's funeral. There are people who felt betrayed by that, people who defended George Bush. And they're just like, wait, now you're speaking out against us.
We need more – Republicans speaking out against Trump. So that
Yeah.
I mean, there are plenty who don't like him, you know. I mean, I mentioned Bill Kristol earlier, and he is he was considered one of the lead conservative voices, and now he's sort of marginalized in those camps because he didn't get on board the Trump train. The most surprising one, and I know we have to wrap up, the most surprising one is Ted Cruz, who all of a sudden is is Donald Trump's like best friend. Mm-hmm. I think he's playing a long game here, and he's gonna pull a fast one on Trump at some point. Mm-hmm. Like, I think in Ted Cruz's mind, he's going to run for president in 2020, and he thinks he's going to beat Trump in the primaries.
Ted Cruz needs all of Trump supporters.
He does that's what I'm saying. He needs those Trump supporters right now in Texas to be able to hopefully eke out a win against Beto. So he's using him like everyone does in politics now to be able to get those people that are
he
Trump supporters.
He doesn't like
to
him. No, yeah. But he needs him.
But he needs him right
he
now.
Needs him right
he
now.
Needs those supporters.
Yeah, and then I think after he gets reelected, then he'll be like, all right, now I'm going to run against Trump. I saw him earlier this week, I think it was yesterday, speaking about how the Democrats want to turn Texas into California. And he's just like eating tofu.
Yep.
And that's
dyed hair. And
yeah, exactly. So I thought that was really, and by the way, dyed hair. So that's Ted Cruz's natural hair color. We're supposed to believe that. Sorry,
wait. It makes me so proud as a Californian that being called a Californian is like a thrown at conservatives.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really easy one to go for in a room like Texas. You could have said, like, they want to make us into New York or Connecticut. You could really throw at basically any blue state. But
but California always is the crazy one.
So our final point today is actually 9/11, and President Trump did go to see there's a new monument that was put up in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Which it's not forgotten, but it's sort of the incident that definitely doesn't get as much attention as the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. And I just wanted to point out that that's the kind of thing that the president should be doing, and good to see him there. And as a New Yorker, you're able to sort of you're able to realize what that day must mean to somebody like Donald Trump. And it just reminds me that there was an alternative universe where Rudy Giuliani was considered a great man.
Yes.
And it was 17 years ago that, as a New Yorker, we all felt that way. And I don't know who this guy is now that has the Rudy Giuliani face, but not to politicize that moment. But it is, I don't know, there are definitely people who feel like, ugh, we're going to commemorate this day again. And there's the argument of, sort of like, wasn't that what the terrorists really want? They want you to be sad every day. But at the same time, I think it's important to have a day like this.
Well, it's important to remember all those people.
Exactly.
But it's also important to remember to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So something, if it's too easily forgotten about, which I think in a lot of ways for everyday people, because now a lot of people that were kids are now adults and working and have their own kids, now that it has kind of gotten not in everyone's forefront of their mind anymore. So it is important to remind people that and to make sure that we do what we can to not let it happen again.
Yeah. So
it's always important. We still have Pearl Harbor Day. So
yeah, right, exactly. And I think that's a perfect example. I think it's very important that that we take a moment, and it was only a moment here, but obviously it is something that is often on our minds, especially a day like today. In any case, we are indeed out of time, but thank you so much to everybody who joined us in the chat. Sorry that we didn't get to your comments today. But you can, in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. You can follow the show at Trump Report ABTV. And Tamara, where do people find you?
Follow me on Twitter at HeyTamara_.
Scott!
You can find me on Twitter calling Mitch McConnell a hypocritical turtle at SMan80.
Was that something that happened just recently?
Happens almost every
day. Almost every day. Good. All right, thanks so much. And I believe Chelsea will be back, and maybe Brooke will be back next week too, so we'll have the whole family back together. But thanks so much, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.